Okay, there we go.
Hello, I'm going to switch over to my handset, so now you can hear me better. Okay, so McElrath Miracle's free conference call is the sole effort of myself, Fia Kushi. I am not affiliated with any group, institution, or organization. They are offered as a free service to celebrate humanity in general, and specifically the lives of wonderful individuals on their journey through healing and life, and whatever else they might be up to that is towards the one peaceful world macrobiotic dream. If you would like to share your own story, then please contact me at Phiya, K-P-H-I-Y-A-K, at gmail.com. I do accept donations to help continue this effort. Donations are not tax deductible. To make a donation, please visit the website at www.phiyakushi.com. phiyakushi.com. This call is being recorded for those who aren't able to attend at this time and will be posted on the website afterwards. The call is in the following format. After a brief self-introduction, I will introduce our special guest this afternoon who will share her remarkable story of courage. This will be followed by a question and answer period until 4 p.m. or until there are no more questions. While the speaker is talking, I will mute everyone except for myself and the speaker, which I'm going to do right now. Let's see. I'm going to mute.
Conference muted.
Okay, we've muted everybody, and I'll disable the audio. Great. So now, during the question and answer period, you will be able to alert me that you wish to have a question. If ask a question by pressing 5-star on your phone. You will know when you are selected, and your line will be unmuted so that you may be heard. When you're finished as host, I will mute your line again. My name is Fia Kushi. I am your host, and just to briefly introduce myself for those who don't know me, I am the third son of Michio and Aveline Kushi, macrobiotic and natural food pioneers. I lived and spent my whole life working in macrobiotics, from food companies, restaurants, bookstores, to educational organizations. And from 1997 to 2003, I was the director of the Kushi Institute. Since then, I travel and teach and counsel people on macrobiotics, and I work also online and promote macrobiotics online. My life's focus is to build healthy, happy, peaceful communities locally and globally in an effort to carry on and realize my parents' dream of one peaceful world. Our calls are usually Sunday afternoons from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Monday evenings 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. However, this Monday, tomorrow, there won't be any call as I must attend a funeral tomorrow, and so there won't be any calls. And next Sunday, we don't have a guest scheduled yet. I might be on usually when that happens, I will offer a free Q&A session with myself. But next Monday, the August 16th, I'm happy to announce that we will have Christina Perrello, the celebrity chef and star of Christina Cooks on the PBS TV show. Christina had recovered from terminal leukemia. She'll be sharing her story of recovery through macrobiotics, and that will be Monday, August 16, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So please join us for that wonderful, exciting. Christina is really a dynamic personality and lots of fun, so that should be a lot of fun. So, again, just to repeat that, tomorrow, Monday, there won't be any call due to a funeral. Next Sunday will probably be, will probably be a call with myself, a Q&A answer session. That will be Sunday, 3 to 4 p.m. And then Monday, August 16, we will have Christina Perrello. Okay, so now today we have a wonderful guest. Her name is Betty Minkin, who I met many years ago in Boston. She has done tremendous work. Since 1995, Betty Menken has been actively campaigning for the development of sustainable village projects in her native country, Turkey. Her macrobiotically inspired ventures raise local awareness about the protection of heirloom seeds, traditional foods, and natural lifestyles. She created the organic company Tohum, T-O-H-U-M, in the U.S. to market traditional Turkish artisan foods to benefit village economy. One of her products, the highly nutritional tohum tahini, is made of heirloom golden sesame seeds and can be obtained from microbiome companies and wholesalers in the Northeast region. It's the best tahini I've ever had. I highly recommend it. In 2006, Betty founded a nonprofit, the Anatolia Foundation, in the U.S. to more effectively support initiate projects that protect the endangered agrobiodiversity of the Anatolia region of Turkey. This region contains the genetic codes of a range of variety of foods we consume in the West, including wheat, barley, almonds, and lentils. Betty's current project involves a full-scale organic certification program with over 200 farmers and the revival of the ancient local grain emmer, which is Triticum dicocum. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but we'll hear from Betty in a minute. Amongst other important traditional food crops, Lawrence Cushy is one of the founding members. He's my brother, also son of my Jonathan. He's one of the founding members and vice president of the foundation. Additionally, she initiated the village NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and the farmers' cooperative. The project also includes botanists cataloging wild flora, grandmothers sharing traditional recipes, beekeepers producing wildflower honey, and women making healing salves and botanical extracts. For more information about the projects, see the website, that's www.anatoliafoundation.org. So that's www.anatoliafoundation.org. And her remarkable efforts were recognized when she became a finalist recently for the 2010 One World Award by Rapunzel, a respected German organic food company, and by the NGO, the International Federation of Organic Agriculture Movements, also known as IFOM. You can see that recognition at their website at www.one-world-award.com. That's www.one-world-award.com. So Macrobiotic Miracles is really pleased and delighted to have such a wonderful person working to help protect traditional agriculture and the local economy in a world that is really heading in the opposite direction. So thank you, Betty, for joining us. I know you're calling from Turkey right now. Where in Turkey are you calling from?
Hello, Fia. Thank you for inviting me, first of all. I'm calling from Istanbul.
Istanbul. Wow, wonderful.
Yes.
I want to sit over there now.
Yes. That's where I am right now. I've been here for the last 5 years, most of the year. And actually, I was here the whole of last year.
Okay.
And yeah, conducting the projects. So I'm more in Turkey right now than in the States for the last 5 years, I can say.
So tell me about your journey and how you got involved in all of this this project. When I first met you, you were in Boston in the macrobiotic community studying.
Yes.
And how did you get involved in macrobiotics in the first place?
How did I get involved? I was living in England in the 70s. And actually, interesting, I was studying naturopathy in England.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody in my class was an some American person came to me and say, hey, you know, you should come to this lecture. There's this person from the States, he's Japanese, his name is Michio Kushi, and you'll be amazed, you know, he's amazing. And I was studying naturopathy, and they were teaching us, you know, vegetarian food, and you would eat all the salads in the middle of the winter in London and have milk and cold glass of milk, you know, in the middle of the kind of cold weather, and I was not feeling very good actually with this food. And I say the first question I asked was, he told me to, you know, kind of involve some kind of diet and everything. So I said, oh, can you eat meat? Coming from Turkey, and I was starving, you know, the salads and milk, glass of milk and everything. He says, oh, yes, you can eat anything. You know?
Yeah.
So I went to this lecture, and I listened to this was my first meeting with Mitra, basically. And I was very impressed. And then I went to the Microbiotic Center in London. It was, I think, in Old Street or something.
Yes.
And I started studying. That was like 1979.
Yes. So you grew up in... You grew up in Turkey, and you moved to...
Yes,
Vermont.
I was born. Yeah, I was born in Turkey, grew up in Turkey. Then after college, I went to London.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I met also my ex-husband, Steve Minken, who became, you know, the editor of East West Journal later on in the 80s.
Yeah.
It was like for a small East West Journal, which became Natural Health Now. Yeah.
Yes,
so... And there's an interesting story there, because after we got married, I mean, I studied microbiotics, you know, my first, and I think it was like first level, or I don't remember if it was, yeah, just the first level I think I did in London. Then after I was married, we moved to California, and then I wanted to go to Boston to study further at the Cushing Institute, which was in Brooklyn, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
And... So it was 1981 or so, and Steve became the East West Journal editor. He was my husband then.
Yeah.
And he was interviewing Michio for an issue of the East West Journal, which was going to be cancer and diet. It was a wonderful issue, actually. If you have it, you should come, you know, bring it back. As he was interviewing Michio, the phone rang. And they told him that his father had pancreatic cancer.
Oh, my.
You know, and one of the miracles, you know, I mean, this is out of our subject matter, but it's interesting. And we can talk about it further later on, another time maybe. But then I was actually just finishing my study at the Cushing Institute. I was very involved, and I was starting to... you know, to kind of practice counseling with Mark Van Kamberg. I really liked his way of teaching, and I was very much interested in counseling. I was doing shiatsu and everything. And then suddenly this happened.
You were the guest on Macrobiotic Miracles just recently.
Yes. At that time he was teaching, you know, at Cushing Institute. He's just really very good teacher. And it was just an amazing, you know, like how the universe works. And Steve was interviewing me too, and then suddenly the phone rings, and they tell him that his father has pancreatic cancer, and everything was like perfect. And then we actually took him out of surgery. We didn't let him have surgery because he was going to basically not make it through the surgery. And I applied microbiotics for about 3 months, and he was given 3 months to die, basically. And after 3 months, he was in remission.
Wow.
So that's my healing story.
That's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, one day we should go into it, because I mean, we never talk about it, but this was an amazing. And, you know, even now, when you ask people if there is a cure for pancreatic cancer, they say, no, there is no cure. But that happened in 1982, I think it was.
Yeah, that's amazing.
He was in remission, and doctor checked him, and same doctor was amazed, but of course then they don't believe it, and they just kind of blank out, you know. So anyway, this was my story. After that, basically, I was really very much into microbiotics for about 7 years. You know how we hear always, if you practice it for 7 years,
right,
then you're okay for your life. Actually, that happened. I was very, very, you know, not strict, but I did it well, and I wasn't sick. I was a healthy person to start with, and I really wanted to help people. And I had an understanding that there was always a better way to treat people who are sick than just with Western medicine, which is sometimes, to me, violent, you know, uses violent methods. I had a mother who was mentally ill sometimes, so I could see that she wasn't treated very well. So, and I was always looking for gentler, more natural ways and for healing people. So it really worked for me. And then I became a shiatsu practitioner for a long time. And then I was away from Turkey for about 10 years or so. When I was married and I had a child, you know, and we did the microbiotic thing with the child and he grew up and everything. And then
wonderful.
About 10 years later in 90, as you said before, 1994 or so, my mother was sick, my father, you know, they were getting old. So
yeah.
I came back to Turkey.
Okay.
And but not for a long time, just I came to visit my parents. And I started feeling that there was something missing in the microbiotic studies coming from Turkey, from a country which is really very rich in culture,
yeah,
and food culture, basically. It's really, we were brought up with abundance, basically, you know, and whatever we learned in microbiotics was very natural to me, very easy to understand, because everything changed with seasons,
yeah,
and we had very balanced meals. We sat down, you know, three meals a day or whatever we ate. Obviously, there was meat in it, but it was all very balanced. We had grains, we had vegetables, fruits, but things disappear with seasons. We didn't have tomatoes in the middle of the winter and, you know, things like that. So it was a very logical way of, you know, it was easy for me to just, you know, practice what I was taught in microbiotics. But something was missing in the teachings. I felt the missing thing was the...
Whoops.
Excuse me. I don't know what happened.
Okay. No.
Okay.
Okay. Good.
Oh, you're
yes.
still there? Okay.
Yes, we're still here.
So what was missing was the connection with the earth, you know?
Yeah.
And it seemed to me that the teachings were leading people to think intellectually.
Yes. Hello? Hello? Okay. Well, Betty is on Skype. From Turkey, so sometimes the internet connection might cut out. We'll just sit and wait a little bit until she gets back on.
I'm not on?
Okay. Oh, there you are. Okay. Yes, great.
I'm
okay.
On? Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay, so where was...
For a second, yes. You're saying sometimes that people thought of macrobiotics a little bit more intellectually.
Oh, yes. So I felt that which was... it wasn't maybe missing from it in a negative way, but because coming from a culture which is rich background, you know, in food culture, I was feeling that the connection with the earth wasn't there so much, and it should be that I could help bring that in, you know. So because, you know, what usually is done is that we always think about going and buying certain products in a store, and then we come to a cooking class and start learning, you know, from a teacher how to cook certain foods. But it's usually the connection is with the store.
That's right.
Not so much growing the food. So, for example, when we hear something like one grain, 100,000 grains,
right,
you know, We understand it intellectually, but we don't understand it really until we plant the grain
right.
in the earth, and then it grows. And then you have, for example, that happened with sesame seeds. But I'll tell you how it happened to me naturally, that I start feeling that I should bring people to Turkey, to a village, and then it would be like a lab. So they could live in a Turkish, in a traditional culture, which is still earthbound,
yeah,
and then really practice, you know, what they're learning, intellectual, what we're learning from Mitra and Avelin, you know, because they have their Japanese background, but most people in the States don't go so back, you know, to tradition.
Right.
So what I did was, when I came back to Turkey, I felt like I should start a center. So in 1995, me and my partner at that time, we started Tohum project. Tohum means seed in Turkish.
Okay.
So we started a center, an eco village, basically, yeah, eco farm, let's say. And that was a very pioneer thing to do in Turkey, because we have traditional villages, but this was some people from city or overseas coming into a village.
Yes.
And then we had this natural, you know, landscape. I mean, you are there in a real community,
yeah,
but we were bringing in a modern understanding, you know, into it. And so we started doing exchange programs. Like, we had actually Meredith McCarthy was Meredith, and at that time, her husband Dan, she also teacher, what's his name? I forgot his name. Meredith and who was the teacher? She also teacher. He just
Patrick
passed,
yeah,
away. Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. So they were married. They brought the first group to that village and started teaching microwave. Yeah, it was amazing because we had village people, Turkish traditional village people, and Meredith and a group of microwave people coming from the States,
wonderful,
cooking together. You know,
wonderful.
So that was really nice. And to go back to the, and you know, the grain thing. So at that village, they were growing sesame seeds, sesame. And we started growing sesame ourselves. And that's when I understood what that meant, you know, one grain, 100,000 grain, because
right,
sesame is an amazing, it's a miracle plant.
Yeah.
You're planting one seed, and then it grows into this big plant. And then the way they will know if it's a good harvest or not, they will actually, it's like pods, you know, it's like... You have like gray, bean pods, you know, but you have tiny little seeds in them, and it's a green plant. It's very sturdy. It's quite high, it's like your height. And then, you're planting just one seed, and you've got thousands and thousands of seeds coming off this one seed. And they'll actually count them. They'll open a pod and they'll count them, and they'll say, "Oh, this is a good year. This is not a good year." And the other thing about this plant is that it doesn't use, you don't need any water, it's dry farming. So I learned all these things by just seeing and practicing it myself, just there on the farm.
Yes.
And when you plant this seed, then you have to know the last day of the rain, and they have a name for it in the village. They call it Tav, T-A-V, you know, that's a Turkish word.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be the last day of the rain, because it's on the Mediterranean climate and it doesn't rain all afterwards, you know, when the weather is okay. The climate, we're not talking about climate change now, but natural climate, you know. It doesn't rain the whole, it's dry season. So they will have to find the last day of the rain and then plant the seed. And then the seed, the roots of the seed will follow under ground water. And then you have, suddenly you have, in the middle of the summer, everything is dry and brown, and then you have this amazing green, bright, you know, huge plant growing without any water, any watering. It's really a miracle plant. And then it has flowers and blooming, and just you have the seeds. So sesame is a very good plant to, and for microbiome people, I think, to plant and see and understand microbiotics, you know, understand how nature works. So we did some farming ourselves, and then from there we had suddenly the food business, because I was living in the States, basically.
Right.
and started asking around. That was before Whole Foods. They were bred on circuses. I was living in the East Coast, as you know. So I started asking them if they would carry tahini, because the tahini was very special. It used five elements to, to cook it, to make the tahini, basically. And
I can
if you if we have time. At that time, but it's you know, everything is changing now. This was like in 1995. So how did the tahini was made? First of all, you have heirloom sesame seeds that you, I think you have them in Japan too. They are golden, gold color sesame seeds.
Yeah.
And they were using those, and they have a high ratio of oil. So to de-hull them, so you have to take the hull out, they would pound them like you would make mochi with wooden sticks.
Okay.
So they were first pounding the seeds, and then they would use wood fire to roast the seeds, but not on the wood fire, but kind of, it's like an earth. You have two compartments to it. One side you have the wood burning, and the other side the heat of the wood. They were just, right, it would take them 3 hours to roast a batch very, very slowly, low fire heat, you know. And so using heat there, I mean fire. And then it would be, they would grind it in a water mill with stone.
Oh, wow.
And very, very, very slow. It was like a dervish whirling, you know, whirling dervish. I had some a documentary I made. It was so slow. It was beautiful. And then, you know, of course, it's a water mill, so you have the water elements. You had, you know, stone, everything, all the five elements were there, and the wood fire, you know. And the, remember that tahini, that was like the beginning of the tahini. It was amazing. Really, really amazing. After 2 years, you would open the jar and it would still smell, you know, though you would have the roasted sesame seeds. So we started the food business, and I was in the States, started Tohum Food, to bring in this traditional products from Turkey that were actually slowly disappearing, because these are made, the artisan foods made by traditional people. And and you know, slowly they stopped pounding the seeds, and then they started using some other ways, and it just changed. And then they stopped using wood fire, which is maybe more ecological, and now they're using gas. And then the water mill closed down. We tried to save the water mill, but you know, some things you can do, some things you cannot. And then it's still a good tahini. It's just what's left of it now is the heirloom sesame seeds and the stone grinding.
Right.
And then I had other products too, which were made traditionally. So this was in the 1990s, the half last part of the 1990s, and the food business is still going on. It's still continuing. Then in 2005, I was invited to Eastern Turkey to take part in a biodiversity conservation project. So, you know, in the meantime, time changes. I mean, we didn't call this biodiversity conservation, but we were actually doing it. And now there's a whole new terminology for what we call, you know, macrobiotics, basically.
Right.
But parts of macrobiotics, it's like little bits of it. So I was invited to Eastern Turkey by some people who are doing bird conservation project, project on migrating birds. So they were doing the sky, you know, biodiversity conservation for the skies and the birds. And I was there to look into the earth, what I could do, the kind of projects I was doing myself, but sustainable village project. And so when I went there, can you hold a second? Just 1 minute, I'm coming. Just close the door, there's some noise. Thank you.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, excuse me. So the first thing I did was when I went to that region, it was like 2005, to find out what I could do. Obviously, I have to eat grains myself. So the first thing I did was went and found some old people, and I asked them what they were eating in the past and how was their health then.
Yeah.
And they started telling me about this grain, I mean a few grains.
Oh.
And they say, the first one was emmer. And they say, well, when we ate this grain, we didn't have so much colon problems, you know, the intestinal problems and heart problems and blah, blah, you know.
Emmer.
And just,
yeah, emmer is spelled E-M-M-E-R.
E-M-M-E-R, yes.
Like
and that, it's basically the... It's the ancestor of modern wheat.
Okay, ancestor of modern wheat. Wow.
It is still in its half wild state. I mean, it's still grown. It's interesting. It has double kernel. That's why it's Bicocum when you're reading the Latin name.
Oh, yeah.
Triticum is wheat.
Yes.
And then it says Bicocum. Bicocum,
right.
Is double kernel. And there's another ancient grain, it's Triticum monococcum, which is one grain, one single one. And that's acorn, and it's still here. It's also disappearing. But this one is Bicocum.
Okay, that's interesting.
So it's very interesting. I'll take a parenthesis, if you allow me, just 1 minute. Before I came on the conference, I was looking at this book by Michio Kushi. It's called Healing Harvest.
Okay.
It was written, you should find it, please. It's amazing. It's 1994.
Okay.
Not too old, but actually, I had this talk with Michio a long time ago, and he said that Anatolia, which is the region of Turkey, which we call Asia Minor, it's the like a bridge.
Right.
That area, Michio said, there was, I mean, we should ask him again. I think he said hundreds of different kinds of wheat grew in this region in the old days.
Uh-huh.
And there are only these two left now from the ancient grains. And emmer is one of them. So in this book, I was looking before I called you. There's actually something about emmer from Turkey. Just 1 minute. Oops, I'll find it right now. It says that before the ice age, even before the glacial ice, human beings farmed and produced their food using radically different methods than those employed in the most recent epoch. And he has even said that at some point there are some legends about a golden age in which crops grew themselves, requiring little, if any, human intervention. And it goes on.
Uh-huh.
And then he says, in Turkey, for example, researchers found that using primitive tools, they could harvest enough wild emmer in the course of about 3 weeks to sustain an average family for an entire year.
Wow.
So this was the times where the earth was so fertile that people didn't even intervene and things grew them by themselves.
That's wonderful.
And then it goes on telling us about the celestial changes, you know, material stuff, typical 12,000 years ago, and Milky Ways and everything. And it says for about another 100 years or so, it's going to be the hello? Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. So it's that it's the fertility of the earth is declining because of celestial changes. And this is going to last another 200 years or so.
Yeah.
So this is why we have to intervene now, and we have to use, sometimes, you know, some people are using artificial methods, but we have to be careful not to do that and continue with natural farming, because this is going to change again.
Right.
And then it's going to be a fertile time again where we don't need to intervene, you know. So this is interesting because I just found this. I was excited. It talks about wild emmer.
Yeah.
So this goes back to thousands of years. In Anatolia, they traced it back to the Neolithic times, where the first human settlements we know of were found.
Uh-huh.
So MR screen existed then. So the memory of the screen is, it's starting like from early civilizations where people really start eating grain. The beginning, so the memory, you know, the memory is still carried through many, many civilizations, and it's there now with us. In Eastern Anatolia, it's amazing. And so what happened was I talked to the older people, and they told me about this, and I said, where can I find it? And they pointed out a village where they still plant it because they eat it with goose.
They eat it with what?
Goose, you know? Animal, goose.
Yes, the
like,
bird.
Like that, you know, goose, like chicken, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they have tradition of in that region they eat goose, so they dry goose and salt it and eat it in the winter, and then when they cook it in a tandoor oven, which is like a well kind of in the earth, they will put the emmer, and emmer is cracked. The only way they can dehull it is by cracking it right now. So they make like a rice pilaf. You would make emmer pilaf. So they are cooking the, just visualize cooking some kind of meat or goose. And then under it, they put this pot of emmer, cracked emmer dish. And then the juice of the, the juice of the duck, the grease goes into the emmer. So it's like a gourmet way of eating. That's why it survives, because those people still eating it, eating it with goose. So luckily, you know, I mean, this is one reason it survived. But so I could find only 2 tons in 2006, and I bought that, the 2 tons, and stored it somewhere.
Okay.
And then they told me about red wheat, which is another type of wheat that we can buy in the States, I think. But they grew it naturally here, and all the villages I went to, they say, you know, when you enter a village in the old days, you would smell the bread, the smell of the aroma of baked bread. But now you don't smell this anymore, you know. So I said, what do you use? You used to cook it with red wheat. So I said, where can I find that? But they're still growing red wheat, but it's slowly disappearing. So that was another crop. And the other very important crop was, they told me about, is flaxseed.
Uh-huh.
So, again, they told me that when they ate flaxseed, they didn't have heart problems. And they didn't have colon cancer and a lot of other, you know, circulation problems and just things that we know, but they really connect the two. And again, that was very difficult to find because it was almost gone. And I found about a ton. I had to go like to 40 villages.
Wow.
And found 1 ton. And so they also told me that they use flaxseed oil the way we would use olive oil, for example, in the Mediterranean region of Turkey. But in that region, they would use flaxseed oil for cooking even. Or in bread or something. So they used a lot.
I see.
And there was a big trade of flaxseed, but suddenly people just stopped buying it from them because Turkey is now importing it from India and other places, and they don't grow flaxseed anymore here. So anyway, I bought a ton of this and also stored it. And then I created Anatolia Foundation to get funding. And I had a two-year project with a foundation called the Christensen Fund, which is based in California. So they funded me, my project. And then I spent 2007 and 2008 mostly in that region, living in there. And we started a project, and people were extremely excited because they knew from their parents, from their grandparents, you know, they ate this food before, and it was disappearing. And suddenly somebody comes from outside and brings this back. They were very happy. So they joined the project very easily. They were excited. And we started an organic certification project because I was in the food business for so many years. I knew about, you know, how to start a certification project and which which company to bring in.
Yes.
And so I brought Ceres. There's a company called Ceres. So they came. And we had, from the beginning, we had 180 farmers to join the project.
Wow. That's amazing.
It was really amazing. So I didn't want to do something so big. I just wanted to do it in a village or someplace around the, and we chose the villages according to their location, because there are some important bird areas and important plant areas in that region. So the villages are around that conservation areas.
I see.
Then, you know, if you do organic farming,
they're all over, spread out all over the country?
Well, we're just talking about one region, which is near the Armenian border. It's eastern Turkey. It's like the furthest you can go in Turkey east.
I see.
It's actually the entrance. It's interesting because it's also the gate of Silk Road entering Anatolia. That means, you know, connecting Asia with Europe.
Yes.
So it's the center of trade.
Wow.
And you had organic products.
Hello?
We'll have this from time to time. It's okay.
Yes.
It doesn't mean anything. Excuse me, I have to charge my battery. Just 1 minute.
Okay. So that's really fascinating.
So I'm back. And we have to. So after 3 years now.
Yes.
In the organic farming project, we have probably 2 tons, must have become over 100 tons or 200. I don't know, because what happened is when people heard about Emmer coming back, of course, there was a lot in the newspapers and everything that Emmer is coming back, Flagship is coming back. So they got so excited, they started swapping seeds. The whole region is now, you know, even outside of our project, people are growing it and start eating it again and everything.
Wonderful.
But the main thing I have to do now is to, the last part of the project is that I have to create the link between conservation and marketing, which means that I have to create products from the crops that are marketable.
Yeah.
And that's the most difficult part, because emmer is a hulled grain, which means the hull is sticking to the grain. It doesn't come off easily. That's one reason it's a primitive grain, so it's very protected. And the interesting thing about this is that because it's so protected, it's also very protected against climate change, which means, you know, it's very important, these grains. I mean, red wheat also, all these grains are sturdy and adaptable to climate change. So they need to be propagated. And also in terms of diversity, because everything is appearing, you have only one type, as you know, this is another subject, but it's a very important subject, the whole thing about the hybrids and GMOs and all that. So the more we propagate the diversity, the diverse grains and different kinds of products, the more we have a chance of, you know, survival going to the next phase, where, as Michio says in this book, we in 200 years we'll have again the fertility period. But in the meantime, we have to really work with the earth, you know, which is actually programmed to for abundance, you know, at this point. Even now, you know, if you still plant one grain, you'll have 1,000 grains. The earth is still giving back more. So my situation is now that I am trying to get the grain, the whole grain from the emmer. And another thing in Turkey is that people are not eating whole grains here. They are feeding the grains to animals still.
Oh.
So they lost the tradition of eating grains, and I've been trying to get this back for the last 15 years, to get them to eat the whole wheat, but still haven't managed to set it properly. So I'm working on this right now, that we have the whole emmer. The only problem with that is that we need modern equipment for this. and we need funding to get the equipment. And also flaxseed, we need more modern equipment to continue with flaxseed, because in the old days they used oxen and different, you know, weight techniques. But now, if we want to make this international marketable products in the organic world, then we need to have modern equipment. So I am at that point now trying to figure out how to do this and how to get the products out. I will be in Germany soon because of this One World Award, you know, with Rapunzel and iFarm, meeting with a lot of people from the organic world movement, I mean, organic food movement. And I'm sure they will be also helping with this. But once we get the equipment, we'll end up with a lot of products coming out of this project, which will be marketable worldwide. And to whom will also market them, but anybody else wants to market them or welcome.
Right. Yeah.
So this is where I'm at right now.
Wow, that's a wonderful.
It's been
journey.
Quite an adventure, I'm telling you.
Yes, and it's really wonderful that the local villages are interested in returning back to all of that instead of moving into fast food and McDonald's and all of those things. It's really great.
They know, you know, they've been using a lot of chemicals in their farms and everything, but they know the earth is becoming like concrete. You know, they lose their fertility of the earth is lost. And they know this, but because they're not told, for example, the farmers are not told by the government or the agricultural, whoever is telling them the hybrids and not the GMOs yet, but, you know, soon. They don't tell them that this will not, these are not fertile grains, I mean fertile seeds. So when they bought this at the first place, the new coming seeds, they thought they were going to get better yields, but they will also still be able to collect their own seeds like they're used to traditionally. They just thought they were like improved.
Right.
And then what they did was they collected the seeds the next year, and then they start planting them, and then suddenly you have monsters coming out. So they didn't know what was happening, you know. And in the meantime, they lost their ancestral seeds. Because
right.
they, you understand?
Right.
Because so they obviously want to go back. When you work with them,
yeah.
the projects have to be done properly. If you work with them in their traditional way, with their traditional foods, and you make it, your project is kind of, it can sustain them, you know, that they know that at the end of this they will have some income. But
yeah.
the income shouldn't be the first thing. The first thing should be their understanding that it's ecological and benefits them socially and, you know, and that. And then it's the income, you know. So you have to be very careful. Because there are projects who only focus on the economical aspect, and it's not sustainable.
That's
they will
right.
make money
That's
and
right.
leave their villages. You want them to stay in their villages, so
right.
so you have to work with their traditional ways. And the project,
yeah.
it was holistic. It wasn't just the seeds, but as you read before, there were other things. We also identified the flora, because the flora is very rich there, trying to make medicinal, you know, from botanicals.
Yeah.
They don't use their flora basically, you know, for medicine or food even. So now they start using that, and I'm working with women to make some medicinals. And then we also collected traditional recipes, about 100 recipes from the different villages to find out about their food culture. And interestingly enough, I know this from my microbiotic studies, I wouldn't have known it otherwise. If when you go to this region, people will tell you, oh, they eat only meat here, you know?
Uh-huh.
But because of microbiotics, I know people don't eat just meat, so I knew
right.
there was something else. So
yeah.
when we started going to the villages with this friend of mine who is a book writer, you know, she's a cookbook writer, she's very
yeah.
good. So we collect recipes. We never told the women to give us recipes without meat. And we had about 100 recipes, and I will tell you, it's about like two of them had meat. They use milk products, but we are talking about mountains. You know, mountains is like 2,000 meter altitude here. So it's very, very cold in the winter. So yeah. they will warm themselves with things like, you know, a lot of milk products, different cheeses, different,
right.
You know, but also a lot of grains that people don't remember in the.
Right.
So we have also a whole bunch of recipes, and we're trying to make a book now to put all this together, how they use plants in the old days for healing. Also, we did an inventory of that. So it's a holistic, it's a whole life project, really, basically.
That's wonderful. Really, it's a lot of projects, so really congratulations on all of that.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Questions. If anybody has any question, press 5-star on your phone. Feel free to do so now. Any questions or comments that you'd like to ask Betty and her marvelous project, in a way.
Thank you very much.
Fighting.
Thank you. I'm happy to share it with you guys. I'm very happy to share it with you.
Well, no, it's really wonderful, and I hope other people get to listen to this talk afterwards.
Thank you. How many people are present now?
We have a couple of people on who are listening, and as I mentioned before, many people, because it's Sunday afternoon and beautiful day.
Great.
Usually people listen afterwards to the recording.
You know, I wanted to add something else, just for a minute. People, usually I'm amazed that I can do all this, you know, with so little funding and everything, and they don't understand how I can put all this together.
Yeah.
But this is because of my studies in microbiotics, you know. I mean, it's just, for me, it's natural, as you understand.
Yes.
It's just the way I eat, the way I heal myself and everything.
Yes.
So it's like I don't use any Western medicine. So for me, to go to a place where the flora is so rich, and the first thing you think is, you know, there should be some botanical medicine here, you know. So.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting how people react to me when they see the whole range of things that are done, you know.
Yes.
But for me, it's just a natural way to do it, you know, just the way life is, you know, basically.
Really wonderful. Yes, it's really returning back to basic macrobiotic principles. It's so wonderful.
Yes.
To hear.
Thank you.
Yeah, so anybody has any questions, please press 5-star. We're almost out of time. So you're going to be in Germany. When is that?
The 15th of September, for about 3 days. And then I might go back to the States, depending what happens with the project between now and then, because I need funding now. You know, my funding is back. But the farmers are, you know, doing this, it's kind of sustaining itself right now. It's just the end products have to come out to make it really sustainable for long term. So I knew a little bit of work, but I want to go back to the States soon.
So if people want to help you with funding, or if they want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Perfect. That would be through the... well, you know, I can give my personal email, which is Betty, B-E-T-I, at Tohum, T, like Tom, O-H-U-M, Tohum.com, which is my brand name as well.
Okay.
And also the Anatolia Foundation website will have an email. And donations are tax deductible, by the way. It's a non-profit. 5013C, and they can also help by buying tahini and eating it.
Okay. Available still in Whole Foods markets and other places?
Well, it's not in Whole Foods. Again, they can order directly because I've neglected a little bit of sales and marketing, so it should be in Whole Foods in Northeast. But Kushi Institute store, if they don't have it, I will contact them. They used to have it, and Gold mine has it.
Okay.
Most of the microbiotic mail order, you know, businesses have it.
Is there
and
a
they can only
website?
Direct.
Tohum.com, is that the company website?
Tohum.com. But if people cannot find it, they can always ask their health food store to get it. It will help us also.
That's
to market or the nearest whole, because UNFI carries it all the way to, you know, in the whole northeast region, which is that, you know, any of the Whole Foods could buy, or any northeast stores can order through UNFI. Yeah.
That's wonderful. So, again, let me just repeat the email. It is Betty, B-E-T-I, at Tohum, T-O-H-U-M.com.
Yes.
And then there's the Anatolia Foundation where you can contact her as well and make donations to her nonprofit organization. Donations are tax deductible, and that's the Anatolia.org.
Anatoliafoundation.org.
AnatoliaFoundation.org. Okay,
yes.
So we're just about run out of time. So thank you again, Betty, and I really wish you luck and congratulations on your recognition, your well-deserved recognition, I would say.
Thanks.
I really am impressed and hope that the project continues forward, and I certainly hope that this call has helped and will help in the future, but certainly if there's anything more we can do or anything more that I can do, feel free to contact me again, and really, best of luck with all of the work that you're doing. Wonderful work.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very, very much. I'm so happy to. I didn't even feel the time pass so quickly.
Yeah.
Do you mean an hour? Okay, great.
Yeah. So again,
thank you. Nice talking to you.
Yeah. So again, thanks for joining Macrobiotic Miracles pre-conference calls. For more information and for future guests, you can visit it. Visit my website at www.phiyakushi.com. So the calls are usually Sunday afternoons 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Monday evenings 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tomorrow evening there won't be a call as I am busy with a funeral tomorrow, but next Sunday there will be a call. The guest is not scheduled yet, it's to be announced. Then next Monday at 9 to 10 p.m., that's August 16, we will have Christina Perello of the Christina Cooks PBS TV show on, who will share her story of recovery from leukemia. So join us then. So thank you again, and have a great afternoon. Thank you, Betty, again so much for everything.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So, bye-bye. Everybody have a great afternoon. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.